What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
I'll push back on you there. I think it makes more sense to do it in a phased manner.
We as, I guess, golf have decided that we need to put a halt on...
We are golf.
We are golf.
Very little is changing. You know, we just hear this and we're like, oh my God, they're rolling back. They're rolling it back.
There's so much money and interest in professional golf. May take back my interest part here. There's so much money in professional golf.
This is, you know, 5% is a little tougher than 10. You got to move that decimal and then divide by two and do it on the fly. What are you talking about?
Yeah, X isn't a thing. It's Twitter.
there you go. Good work.
Fuck that. What is up, gang? Walker Simas back with Mudball Monday, joined by Henry Schimp. And boy, oh boy, what a day it was to be on Twitter. Today, we're talking rollback. Who's it for, man? Who is rollback for? I have no idea. Henry, how are you?
Fantastic. What did you mention? Twitter? What are you talking about?
Yeah, X isn't a thing. It's Twitter.
there you go. Good work.
Fuck that. Yeah, we're going to get into self today. It's been well over a month since we've gotten into self. Excited for that. I'll lead us off, toss it to Shimp, and then we'll get into it for the distance debate. Not really a debate, more of a chat. Nonetheless. All right, you're going to be interested in this. I was looking at the data today. Getting in on big data. And my average recovery is up to 78 from 73% in October. But the big lesson that I've been learning this year is about overreaching. And I'm wondering if you've, you know, hit this problem before. Where I was looking
yes,
back
at the answer is yes.
My year
overreach.
Brother, every time in the last 2 years that I have overreached, I tank like big time. It takes me probably 20, 25 days to get back into the high performance zone after I overreach. And so I would say the big win really over the last 2 months or so is that I've really kept the training at a really nice level, but have not overreached, and just thrilled to have recovery scores that good, given that the training's been, you know, pretty high. So total win, sleeping's been great. Probably the best of any self that we've done on Mudball Monday. So that's very, very good. And it's carb loading season as far as the eating goes. I am, we just finished up. All right. So I'm at my grandmother's place in Charleston. It's nice to be on the flip flop. Normally I'm talking to you in Charleston. And
actually not anymore because my fucking Wi-Fi doesn't work when I'm there. So we don't talk to Charleston anymore. We try to.
That's true. So had some mushroom ravioli tonight with like this red sauce, green olives, tons of garlic, all of the aromatics.
Big garlic.
Getting into big stems. You know, the stems in garlic, do you remove the green stems if you let garlic sit too long, or do you just say, fuck it, I'm going with the whole thing? This isn't
the whole
Michelin
thing. Okay. Really, really quick sidebar. I've been meaning to ask this for like literally 3 months on Mudball Monday, but I haven't brought it up. Garlic, fine, or are you all about some hunks? Like, do you want to leave some nice chunkage in there?
I got a good clean answer to this. If it's chunks, we're going low and slow. But if we're doing like a quick sizzle, it's gotta be fine. There's this scene in The Sopranos where they're making like, you know, prison meal basically. And the guy is cutting garlic super, super thinly with a razor blade, and it melts
That's
into
scary.
The sauce. It's good shit. But yeah, I'd go thin. But yeah, but really, we're just carb loading. And I've got to get, I don't know, 580 grams of carbs in me. Day one complete over the next 2 days. So we'll keep you posted there. But I have not missed a meal, man. It's been a grind getting those last calories down every day, but I would just say over the last month or so, sitting at like 80 grams of protein a day from like really, really clean sources.
Surely more than that.
Yeah, but I would say 110, 120 average. That's my eating. Learning, man. I've been learning from all the geniuses on golf Twitter today. I've been learning from all the folks who seem to know a lot about hot driver heads, and I've just been learning a lot on golf Twitter, not Golf X. And that's been really exciting for me. And then fitness, I got to run some miles this weekend. So we'll keep you posted on how that goes on Mudball Monday next week. But that's all I got. Henry, what's your self looking like?
Well, starting off with the sleeping, it's going to be different than you. You mentioned on last Mudball Monday our guy Marcus Philly, and he was posting some sleep metric stats. No free ads here. Similar to what you and I talk about, what we use, and his were like exactly the same as mine. Basically, coming off of Thanksgiving, it's been a full like 2 week process to kind of get back to baseline, which is just it's kind of crazy. It shows that when you live pretty tight for the most part, that a few days, even if they're not like wild, can really throw you off. I cannot imagine what like a 4 day Vegas bender would do to you in terms of like how that would push out over the course of a month. So to a lesser extent, I feel like I experienced the same thing after Thanksgiving, just like 7 or 8 days, just could not get things dialed back in. Now, frankly, you talk about overreaching. I don't really care that much. If the recovery's down, it's like, hey, if I don't feel right, then I don't feel right. We'll manage that. But if I feel fine, but the recovery's a little bit down, just whatever. Keep on going. So I'm kind of catching that upward wave at this point, which is nice. But yeah, the last couple of weeks or so, the big data is not telling me great things about my sleep. But again, I think that there needs to be a really healthy balance between what the data is telling you and what you're feeling. If you feel good and the data is telling you something less than stellar, it's like, I think you're doing yourself a disservice to not, continue on with your life as you should. We've been doing this, us as the human race, for long enough. We don't need the data to tell us everything. So, that's my sleeping. Going into my eating. So I threw up a story today. Had just an awesome couple pieces of salmon last night, and I absolutely love salmon. Salmon, I think people think of fish as just like more broad. It's like salmon, and tuna's tuna. It's not really the case. Like you've got ribeye, you've got fillet when we're talking about beef. Salmon, like sockeye to me, is essentially fillet. And then like some nice Atlantic or king salmon, that's more of your ribeye. And I mean, look, I respect sockeye, but I'm choosing Atlantic every single time. Like some night gets nice and flaky, a little bit more fat in there. The skin is fantastic. Just a nice crispy skin piece of salmon I absolutely love. So anyway, throw up a story. If one had to stay and one had to go, salmon or steak? And I mean, as it should have, steak just absolutely cleaned up. So I'm sitting here talking about how for my eating, I love salmon, but it did push me to think like, okay, well, if I only could choose one, I cannot part ways with the cow. And I was happy to see the listeners of Mudball Monday, or the followers of the tie, I should say, on Instagram. If you're a listener and you're not a follower on Instagram, then you need to get that straight. But I was happy to see that people's minds are in the right spot. It was like, well over 80% were on the steak block, and a pretty large majority of those salmon choosers I saw were, let's just say, north of age 50-year-old men. So that might tell you kind of what your future looks like. But anyway, I
I
digress.
thought, dude, I thought you were having salmon for breakfast. So glad to hear that was dinner last night.
That is serial killer's thinking to think that I was eating green beans, potatoes, and salmon for
Brother,
breakfast. I
you
would
had
do it. I just don't have time. I don't have time for that for breakfast.
Yeah,
But I'd be a
crazier
happy
shit's
man if I
happened.
did, frankly. Shit. Okay. Learning, going into learning. What am I learning? Well, I'm going to kind of keep rolling off of my eating. I think that there's a very fine balance when you consider yourself to be a hashtag chef between not ever really using any recipes and just kind of going off of feel, and then just being completely ignorant to the fact that, I mean, unless you're Thomas Keller, you don't know all the tricks in the book, right? And so I think they're just like the golf swing or golf or anything else. There needs to be this continuous process of, okay, what do I like to do? How do I do it? And how can I do it better? How can I learn from others? And so I've been trying to just take some things and some dishes that I like to cook and I think I do a pretty good job with, and then actually look at how other people do them and kind of fine tune some things. So like, this is the most basic thing ever, but talking about that dish last night, green beans, like oftentimes I'll do a saute. Sometimes I'll put them, in an air fryer. I do green beans multiple different ways, but frankly, I've never really like boiled green beans before. I tried boiling them, but something that's absolutely key when you boil any sort of vegetable, that water needs to be fucking salty. And if you do it right, they come out nice. Like you don't even really need to season them hardly. So some nice boiled veg in salty water, not just regular water. Really nice. So that's like the most simple basic thing I could ever refer to in my learning. But I learned something new this week and it had to do with salted water and green beans. So that is that. Rolling on to my fitness. This doesn't have a lot to do with green beans, frankly, but what are we on? December the 5th. I am putting a tick in the win column for the road to 200. I have not touched 200, but this past kind of 10 days or so, I've been consistently between like 193 and 195. And, you know, with some big meals coming up over the holidays, like I'll probably get damn close, if not touch 200. And I'm just pleased with kind of the process that I've gone with. I feel like my cardio level, frankly, is in a better spot than it was 20 some pounds ago. I'm certainly miles and miles stronger. Honestly, not that I was really looking to track any of these metrics because I don't frankly care all that much. But my waist size hasn't really changed at all. So I feel like I've put on like good weight. I feel just a lot better and I'm damn close, and I don't need to just go hammer a dozen donuts to say I, you know, push myself over the edge. I might do it anyway if I feel like it, but that is what it is. So a check in the box in the fitness category for the road to 200, and you know, we're going to continue on with some of the same sort of stuff with some fine tuned goals as well. We got some other stuff coming that we'll be talking about more as we get into the end of year pod and in 2024, which is awfully close. So that is self. Let's get into some rollback chat.
All right. So kind of the agenda for today, the USGA and RNA put out a statement today telling us that it is certain we as golf have decided that we need to put a halt on
We Are Golf.
And there's a compelling argument to be made that that is the case. But we'll get into some other stuff today that may tell us otherwise. Yeah, the agenda today is really acknowledging what did happen. I think that we shouldn't spend too much time today like rehashing the facts, frankly, because I would encourage anybody who hasn't been on golf Twitter today to spend some time there, because there's so much swimming around in this pool. And frankly, I think the most enjoyable thing is just that there are a lot of people in the golf world who I respect for a variety of different reasons who have different takes on this. And I think that's super cool and similar. This feels and smells similar to Live, only in the sense where it's too early. Like there is so much time to watch this develop and unfold, and it will, this pan will get cold very quickly until it gets hot again.
Cold pan is a sad thing.
It's kind of fun to kind of like, you know, watch the popcorn pop so early in this process. But yeah, let's acknowledge kind of what happened today. I want to talk about who this rollback affects most, not just players, of course. I think most of the talk today has been about professionals and then the amateurs. And I think it's a pretty easy judgment to make that most of the golfers are not professionals. But this also affects manufacturers. This affects the governing bodies. This affects television. And we'll get into some of that. I want to talk about what biases are on the table for the governing bodies, for the manufacturers, for the players, and for us. And we'll get into some questions later on in the episode. Henry, I'll open it up to you. As far as professional golf goes, do you think this is a good thing for the game right now?
I do, frankly. I have been pro rollback for quite some time. I'll preface with a couple things here. First and foremost, it's very, very little that we're actually rolling the ball back. We're talking about 5% in terms of first iteration, which means that a 300 yard drive, if my maths are correct here, please correct me, Mr. Simus. Would be going about 285. So very, very small that we're talking about. I was talking to a buddy about this the other day, and he asked me, he just like hit me straight up. He's like, "Hey, what do you think about rollback?" And I was like, you know, to be completely honest, like I have thoughts, but I hadn't really thought too deeply about it. And so I kind of like went away and I thought about it for a little bit. And one of the things that came to me is I was like, you know what? We need 500 yards to be a long par four again, because 500 anymore is just simply not a very long par four when you think about it, especially like summer conditions, any sort of firm ground conditions whatsoever. A guy who hits bombs like Rory, or I'm not going to say the name JR at the moment. There's a lot going on there, but longer hitters, 500, 515, 530 even, anymore, these are just not very long par fours. And I think if it starts with a five, it needs to be a long par four. And so I think that we should like simplify our thoughts around all of this stuff and just use some basic metrics. 7,500 needs to be just a generally long golf course. 225 should kind of be that line where it's like, this is starting to become a pretty long par three. So I know that all of these things kind of maybe are contrary to what's even important here, because it's just these kinds of like rules that we've made in our mind around what golf should be from a distance perspective. But it does just feel like that's the game that we're playing is, look, none of it really matters at a point if you're talking about like, oh, well, what is a long par four? What is a long par three, et cetera, et cetera. But what does matter is what actually comes with that in terms of lengthening golf courses and the real estate involved and some of the things that I want to ask you about here in a moment. And so I think if we simplify it of like, okay, what are we trying to accomplish here? Where have we lost our way? And then what are the downstream effects of that? It makes the whole concept a lot simpler than it is at the moment, because there are just so many people throwing shit at the wall and too much of it is sticking. Maybe none of it's sticking. I don't really know. But kicking it back to you with some of that sort of stuff, like where does your mind go when you hear this sort of announcement when it comes more to the golf course side of things and the real estate perspective and the architectural perspective and some of those sorts of conversations that we've been hearing for a number of years now?
I thought Mike Wan's comments today were like refreshing and encouraging, honestly. I mean, in that press conference, he acknowledged that though the governing bodies would like to reintroduce courses that we've lost and have become obsolete, that isn't really the primary function of the decision that was made today. And I'm glad that he acknowledged that, because I think it's a very small percentage of the people that are angry, confused, I don't even know what to call it, that really care about the golf course stuff, the acreage, just the money that goes into solving these sorts of problems. So I was really thrilled to hear him announce that. This seems to me just like the first step in many of halting the problem that will cause kind of like a question mark of, you know, what will our golf courses look like in 40, 50, 60, 100 years change? And that's probably not that hard to imagine. But, you know, I heard you talking about what yardages seem to be like the kind of like a good metric, right? 500 yard long par four, 7,500 yards, you know, properly long golf course, 225 yards long par three. Like that sounds right. But in what context? Like when did those numbers constitute too long? Or while things are getting out of hand? So unfortunately, even though I'd love to talk about, you know, today what golf courses we would like to see played because of this change, it's just not gonna be what we're gonna talk about today. Maybe in the future. I guess my big question, Henry, is this change that is going to take about 4 years to implement in the golfing world, the professional world, is this a phase one? Do the governing bodies have plans to institute a ball that is even even more altered? I don't know the answer to this. If that is the case, if there's a second phase and a third phase and a fourth phase, I don't understand why we don't just go ahead and really bite the bullet, save ourselves some steps.
I'll push back on you there. I think it makes more sense to do it in a phased manner. Now, not every 4 years. I think if we're doing this in a phased manner and the goal is to bring the ball back, let's say 15 or 18 total percent, 5% each time, which, becomes slightly less as you roll it back on a smaller number. But we don't need to take 20 years to do it. But I also don't think that they want to just like completely change, because if you roll it back 20%, okay, now all of a sudden that does change things quite a bit. When you talk about like a lower compression golf ball, or I guess it would be a higher compression golf ball. It's kind of a weird thing to think about physically, of like which way it goes for different sports, but yeah, it'd be a higher compression ball. But that would look really different all of a sudden if we decided to just roll it back 20%. So I think that the phased rollback does make sense, but something you mentioned there about two things: one, halting progress, and two, bringing golf courses back into play. That's where I think that certain people maybe just don't completely understand what the announcement was or what the intention is here, because I mean, we're talking about 5% that's going to take place in 2028, if I'm not mistaken. And so people are sitting here, if they're thinking to themselves, oh, maybe we'll get Cypress Point back in the rotation for the US Open or something. Not that it ever was, but just as an example, that course is 6,600 yards. Like, people are immediately thinking rollback means the ball's coming back 20%. It's coming back 5%. And what I think is more important to understand, the term halting, I think that's all we're doing. Because if you think about all of the other things that have contributed to the ball going further, fitness regimen, people understanding the golf swing better, ground conditions, there's so many things that go into the distance that the ball travels these days. The ball is absolutely a big piece of it, but it is by no means the only measure that has been taken to get the ball to go as far as it has. And so all I think that we're doing here realistically is saying, okay, in 2028, we're going to be about in the same spot as we are today, because all of those other things are going to persist. It's just that if we slow down the rate at which the golf ball is going further, then maybe that's one variable that we're going to control here. And it's the one that makes the most sense, right? So I think that's an interesting way to kind of think through this. And another spot that my mind goes there is like, when I was talking to someone the other day about like, what are the good and bad outcomes of this? Something that I think has been a really negative outcome of the ball going further and us deciding to not roll it back is that all of a sudden, like, some of the advancements that we've made from an agronomic standpoint that in my mind have been extremely positive from a standpoint of aesthetics and playing conditions and something that everyone enjoys, the way that we've made golf courses firmer, some of these new strands of grass that are being implemented at a lot of new golf courses, sandier conditions, the way that we've sought out sandy golf. That's a big piece of architecture here that no one seems to talk about. Like, the ball goes further on sand, and that's become the model of where people want to build golf courses. But all of a sudden, if the ball keeps going further, we kind of muddle the, oh, well, the golf ball is going further, and so maybe we shouldn't be having these firm playing conditions. It's like, no, we want really nice, high quality, firm playing conditions. And so don't let the golf ball get in the way of other things that are making the game better. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've thought about is like, how has not just the golf ball, going, how is it not just the golf ball going from one point to another further, but what are all of the other things that get kind of lost in translation there that maybe have been to the detriment of the game overall?
There's so much to unpack there. One of the things that Rory talked about in his, there were a couple clips on, I'll just keep hammering the Twitter train today.
X.
His thoughts were very interesting. I didn't agree with them all, but it was great to hear his perspective on it, because I feel like most of what we've heard from Rory has just been these short little statements that are shown in text, and it's nice to hear him flesh this out on camera. And he raised a good point that we've all talked about before in the architecture space. People are interested in architecture. It's like, Yes, the ground conditions are faster. Yes, we want faster ground conditions. Obviously, the only thing that really the USGA / RNA can measure is carry distance and ball speed, right? I mean, it's honestly more ball speed coming off the club face than it is carry distance, because you've got different altitudes and all sorts of different factors that can affect carry distance. But if you widen the corridors, there are ways to incentivize players away from just like taking certain lines, you know. I mean, I look at some of the old, like some of the like Sunningdale old and some of the courses in the Heathlands where like the bunkers are staggered against the fairway. And unless you're really specific with where you're hitting the ball in the fairway, you're just going to run into one of those bunkers and have to compete with the heather. And, you know, I would love to see a version of competitive golf where players are okay with the ball carrying much, much shorter than it is today, but we like fully embrace the ground conditions that tournaments can afford. I mean, there's so much money and interest in professional golf. May take back my interest part here. There's so much money in professional golf that the majority of these courses, you know, even though Oakmont could probably host the U.S. Open with a 2-week notice in August or July, you know, what you can do from an agronomy standpoint, as long as you have the notice and the manpower, it is incredible. I mean, weather permitting, unless you have just like a giant storm or something, you can turn shit to sunshine pretty fast. So I agree with you. I would love to continue to embrace all of those factors, but you're like, the ball is very clearly the first thing to limit. The other thing that I found that was interesting in this USGA RNA update was the tampering, like kind of upping the tampering of club testing, particularly with the sweet spot stuff. And I would like to get into bifurcation here a little bit, even though I feel like it's a little bit off base given the report that we get today. It's like, we're not going with bifurcation. We're going with a universal rollback. They've made that very clear. The manufacturers have had a large say in that. The ball is singular. So if you start messing with the sweet spot, of course, nothing is solid here. But once we start messing with the clubs, I think we're in a whole new territory. And that's something that I am against, at least for the time being. I think we need to fix the ball temporarily, make sure that is right for the time being, and then reassess. But the hot face is still a little bit of a lost world to me. What do you know about the current equipment testing? Have you seen anything online that either doesn't make sense to you or you feel needs to be addressed?
Frankly, I know very little about equipment testing. I know that faces have gotten thinner and thinner over time on drivers. And I mean, shit, the other thing that's gone on is like kind of going back to the like, well, a 500-yard par four should be long, and just like what we understand to be our barometer on distances with different things. Like irons, for example, they just have them 2 degrees lower than they used to, you know? So like, a 7 iron's now a 6.5. That's a lot of what's gone on, is like, there's just been such this infatuation with distance that like every measure has been taken to get people to think they hit the ball further. You know, it's like, it's no different than so many other things that the equipment manufacturers know that distance is ultimately a good thing for their bottom line. And so all measures are being taken to increase distance as much as possible in every angle of the game. So I know I kind of completely sidestepped your question there, which is partially because I didn't have a good answer to it. But yeah, on the equipment testing side, I frankly don't know a whole lot.
Well, that's fine. That kind of works us into just like, this doesn't have to be a heavy hitting thing, because there's so much that both of us don't know as far as the conversations that have been had between the governing bodies and the equipment manufacturers since 2020, since this agreement was started, since they've been collecting all the big data, shit like that. And obviously it's really important. Distance sells. And I don't think this is some race. Like I don't see some scenario where some or the majority of the manufacturers are going to struggle to bring a ball to market, right? But I do wonder how the fuck they're going to market it. It's going to have to be a completely different strategy. And I'm just fascinated to see what changes are made in the space. Like, does Titleist stay the number one ball? Is Titleist even the number one ball, or have they just been telling us that? What balls that we know of as popular, with a decent amount of market share, will just fall off the face of the earth? And how will they try and differentiate from one another? That to me is just going to be a complete circus show. Any thoughts there?
I mean, you're getting into some serious conspiracy sort of talk here. Like, I don't know. Do you think there's even a golf ball on the moon? Like, did we even go to the moon? That's kind of what I'm getting, the vibe I'm getting from you.
Sounds like a whole nother Mudball Monday.
That is a very interesting concept. It's like, what changes here from a marketing standpoint? But what I go back to is like, very little is changing. You know, we just hear this and we're like, oh my God, they're rolling back. They're rolling it back. And I'm like, it's coming back. Like, if you're the average golfer, okay, like I don't mean to be mean here or anything. If you're the average golfer and you fly your driver 200 yards, brother, that thing's now flying about 195 or six. Like, you're not going to notice a
You
difference
won't even
there,
know.
especially since you don't hit it in the middle of the face 90% of the time. So it's just like, it doesn't really make a difference. I think what they essentially are doing here, this is my kind of summation of this. I'm going to give this a run. Okay. There has been a lot of pressure for them to just make the announcement. Someone make the decision. Yes, guys, we are going to do it. We're going to roll the ball back. However, no one wants to go bifurcation. Not no one, but I think generally speaking, as this conversation has gone on for the past however many years, there's been a fairly common thread that bifurcation is not the route that we want to go in the game of golf. They do it in baseball, they do it in so many other sports, but in golf, it seems as if we didn't want to do bifurcation. Okay, so we are doing rollback, but we don't want bifurcation. So what are we going to do? We're going to basically not even roll the golf ball back, because if you again fly the ball 200 yards, it's now going like 4 or 5 yards shorter, and it's just not going to make any difference for people. If you fly the ball 320 yards and your average drive or the dispersion between how far each drive flies is virtually nothing, you are going to notice a difference there. And so basically, to me, what they've done is figured out a good method here, just purely through math, where they can roll it back, they can make the announcement, they can start this process that I do think will take a number of years. I think in 12 years, we're going to be a lot more than 5% back. But anyway, they've decided that they're going to do it so that from a PR perspective, it looks like a good thing just for the game of golf. But it doesn't really affect people all that much, other than those that we actually need to make an effect on, the pros. And even then, it's very little, but at least something. So that, honestly, that's my take on it, is I think that we're making a big deal out of this, and it's not going to happen for 4 years, A, and B, when it does, it's going to be like, ah, oh, shit, like Rory bombed it and it went 320 rather than 350. Whoop-de-doo. Like, God, world is ending. And my numbers aren't even right there. It went 336 or something. Like, it's not changing. It's just
Cameron
not that big of a deal.
Chip fucking
I'm so
bombs the ball
I'm like I'm
385.
this is, you know, 5% is a little tougher than 10. You got to move that decimal and then divide by two and do it on the fly. You got to be
Fuck, man,
sharp.
you've already lost me. Get out of here.
But anyway, people are just making this into a significantly bigger deal than it is. And I don't mean to like cancel any of your questions or pretend as if this isn't to some degree significant. I do think that the route that we are taking is significant. You know, like
It's a big
we
step
chose
for Mike Wan.
we chose we we're off the highway. Okay, we finally chose an exit, and God damn it, what's the only restaurant on that exit? It's a fucking Chipotle. Like, we made a statement about the direction that we're going, but it's like 55 miles off the highway. Like, it's a long time before we have to actually announce ourselves as supporters of Chipotle, but like, it's the only restaurant there. And at the next exit, there was a Chick-fil-A, there was a Mickey D's, there were a lot of options. And so we've announced the direction in which we're heading. But ultimately, it's going to take some time to get there. And once we do, it's not going to be a very big deal at all.
What a world we live in.
What I think is a bigger deal, last thing that we're going to touch on here today. This is Mudball Monday. We've talked about this before. This is anything but journalism. It is all about speculation and just dog shit, basically. There's been talk about the cat, his last event potentially coming up at PNC with Nike Golf. I've actually, this won't surprise you even a little bit, been much deeper down that rabbit hole than I have down this whole rollback rabbit hole or lack thereof. Again, this is not journalism. This is speculation. I think it's 100% true. I think that it's done. If you look at where Nike Golf is headed, if you look at kind of the writing on the wall with what Tiger's been doing as of late, I think it's over. So the question is, what do we want to see the cat wearing in 24? We just talked about him. If you haven't checked out that Mudball Monday, episode 113, that was our last one, talking about the cat at the Hero World Challenge. What do we want to see the cat wearing in his at least handful of events in 2024? I've got three options in mind, but I'm curious to hear yours first.
I've got one hellaciously foolish answer, and I've got one legitimate answer. And if you've got one on each side, I'd love to hear yours as well.
I've got three on one side, and you can probably guess which one that is. But go on.
I'll add a second one onto my hellaciously bad side take. I would love to see Puma and Hugo Boss, except I would love, just because it's cat, I would love to see enlarged logos. In fact, Polo would work, but only if the Polo logo is like 3x the size that it is on the, you know, Jonathan Bird shirts or something.
Well, already we need cat Polo going. You know, we can't have a guy riding a horse. He'd need to be riding a cat. Maybe a cat rides a horse. I don't know.
But honestly, those are my hellaciously bad takes. And once we start getting into cat riding a horse, now I start to actually like things a little bit more. My proper take would be Lulu. Like, I'd fucking love to see the guy
look sharp.
Yeah, just buys and tries and tits. It'd be great.
Okay, so, I now have four. Okay, so these are the ones that I've been working on for a few days here. So, I think Sean John is a great option, you know, P. Diddy's brand formerly. I think that Big Baller Brand would be a great direction to go. I'd love to see him sporting some Big Baller Brand shoes out
Lamar.
There. And finally, most importantly, just Golf, Tyler, the Creator's brand. I'd love to see Kat out there you know, the neon golf hats. That would be sick. But as you talk about Lulu, I think that's actually a pretty good shout. I'd love to see Kat just go like full send, like Lulu's a pretty good example, but just full send on like a fitness brand. Like, what's that one that, like Gymshark or some shit like that. Just like not even a golf brand. Just like wants.
More emphasis on like the pre-round post gym.
Yes, exactly.
Clubhouse than fucking who cares about Friday's round, you know? Like, I want to see the arrival as much or more than I do, you know, the first nine holes. So,
I get very tingly anytime Kat is playing in, you know, all parts of the experience essentially. But when you see the picture of him walking in with the cutoff and the glasses and the backwards hat, I'm just like, oh my God,
gets me fired up.
This game is sick, and not even out here hitting a ball, and we're not hitting it shorter either by 5%. God damn it.
This is going to be the highlights of this episode. When you go and listen to it, you're going to be like, it says they're talking about rollback, but all I hear is
they've got a cat riding a horse.
That's all I hear. So that's sick.
No more speculation on the Brothers 54. It's a tough scene. It's what it is. Deal. It's
that's a lot of money, dude.
It is what it is. That is episode 114. That is Mudball Monday. Mr. Simus. Thank you,
Mr. Shimp. Be well.